You're with Patrick Henningsen on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to TNT, today's News Talk. I'm Patrick Henningsen, your host. We're into the third hour of this live broadcast. Thank you for joining us, for coming along with us on this journey of enlightenment, education, and entertainment. We'll have a segment for you in just a minute. We had a great opportunity a little over a week ago, to speak with the editor and founder of ClimateDepot.com. He's also the creator of Climate Hustle 1 and 2, the documentary films, among many other things, and a book coming out on The Great Reset, and a show on TNT, Today's News Talk. Mark Morano joined us, and we had a great discussion about his work and also just about the whole climate change agenda in general, and how it's really come into its own, especially post-COVID. So it's all out in the open now. There's no hiding anymore. Everybody knows where everybody else stands, what everybody is up to. Very few of the plans are hidden now. It's all come out in the open. Just read Klaus Schwab's books, and you can see that he is the spiritual leader of this technocratic movement. The spacesuit isn't a costume, ladies and gentlemen. That's a uniform. But here's part two of our discussion on the climate issue with Mark Morano. So I'm here talking with Mark Morano. He is the editor and founder of ClimateDepot.com. He's also a host and contributor at TNT Radio. And Mark, you know, before the break, we were talking about this agenda. You started talking about the convergence of COVID and climate as two crises wrapped into one. And in terms of a climate emergency, here's the question. If it's summertime, Mark, so this is like the seasonal ritual now, you start to see a barrage of media coverage and stories about extreme weather events, record heat waves, etc. So would an extreme weather event trigger a climate emergency or a climate lockdown or a heat wave or something like this? I'm just wondering what could trigger the climate lockdown that so many of these people that are backing this type of policy as a way forward to, you know, save the planet. What do you think the mechanism might be for something like that?
I mean, I think the first one would probably be a bad hurricane, a tornado outbreak, obviously a heat wave. They will use that. Like, for instance, California. They've already announced, because of their, by the way, World Economic Forum just announced California is the model for the rest of the world. This is the Davos group, their energy policy. You know, California has the most expensive energy and the most insane energy policies, started when, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger was governor and did all the virtue signaling. But California, if they start having energy blackouts and shortages, They'll say, well, this is caused by extreme heat and our grid can't keep up, but this is caused by climate change. And they'll try to declare a climate, they could try to declare a climate emergency just based on the fact that they cut back energy so much that we're facing blackouts, but they'll blame it on the weather. So there's any number of possibilities with that. But I think ultimately what they're going to try to do is, Joe Biden is probably, he's a little bit distracted. He's not going to declare any kind of climate emergency or version of it between now and the midterm elections. But after the midterm elections, especially if it looks like they're not going to win in 2024 or they're facing peril, they could declare it early next year or late this year. And once they get that in, they could do such structural and deep-seated things under an emergency declaration. Now, keep in mind, the emergency declarations are phenomenal because they're just so hard to challenge. Look at how Justin Trudeau has been able to use them, to the point where he can shut off your banking, your bank card. If you even make cookies or bagels for trucker protests, he doesn't like it, he gets the baker and shuts down their bank account. If you give a thumbs up on social media, not only do you get banned, deplatformed, but you can get defunded and stop use of your card. That's the beauty of emergency declarations. So don't ever take an emergency declaration lightly. He's already tinkering around using the War Production Act and these different World War II era things to mandate more solar power. I mean, it's just nuts what they're doing. It's like a bizarro world. You can't even imagine anything more out of touch with reality. But it's almost like when you hear Biden speak, that's like the way it is. But there's actually people behind them with a very clear, focused agenda. So this is not a doddering old man. This is a really sophisticated, organized, decades in the waiting movement, waiting to move quickly. So under this climate emergency, what could happen immediately is what the International Energy Agency report, and they shocked me. They came out with a report, and it's hard to shock me. This was a group, International Energy Agency. They've always been great with just monitoring energy trends around the world, whether it's oil, gas, nuclear, solar, wind. They're data geeks. I always saw them as, well, somehow they've been captured. And they issued a report earlier this year that essentially, in response to the invasion of Ukraine, looked like the version of a climate lockdown. They recommended all sorts of things, not only raising the highway, controlling thermostats, limiting car travel, odd even license plates, banning driving in cities. Everything in that report, and I would tell your listeners, Patrick, if you want to know what a template for a climate lockdown, a climate emergency would be in the United States if Joe Biden declared one, look at that report, International Energy Agency. It's at my website. I think if you look up energy lockdown, it'll come up in my search engine at climatedepot.com. That they lay out the blueprint. Remember, I already mentioned how the pandemic, how the COVID lockdowns, 10 years in the making with major organizations from World Economic, John Hopkins, and other universities and organizations lay out that template. Well, the template's been laid out, not only in the International Energy Agency, but in other reports too, UK government-funded reports and in scientific journals. But those are the reports. The idea is every aspect of your life is going to be rationed, controlled, limited because of this higher goal of trying to change the weather. And one of the biggest proponents I mentioned was Chuck Schumer. He's actually on record, and he's in my film, Climate Hustle 2, saying this, you'll see it in the movie, saying on the U.S. Senate floor that, quote, everybody knows that if we'd done more on climate, these hurricanes wouldn't be that bad.
Really?
And Obama's guy pushing the cap and trade said, we need this cap and trade bill because we know the storms are getting worse and we know the climate's getting worse. So the idea is these are going to fix it. Now, first off, John Kerry has admitted that even if the U.S. zeroed out our emissions, including Western Europe, including Canada, it wouldn't even affect global emissions because China, India, South America, even Africa, developing world is developing so rapidly, emissions are going up. Nothing we do would matter. So if you look at the headline at Climate Depot this week, I have, what do they want to do? They want to now go after Africa. There's a whole movement about how Africa can't use fossil fuels because they can't make our mistakes. We made 200 years of mistakes, i.e. the entire last 200 years of wealth creation, industrial revolution, and fossil fuels were a huge mistake. This is in the UK Guardian. It's my headline at Climate Depot. And what they're basically saying is this is the new form of colonialism, except at least you could argue the old form of colonialism brought modernity, brought modern medicine, brought infrastructure, modern sewage, and cleaned up a lot of the developing world. Well, this new form of colonialism is one that says you can't have what the white, wealthy Western world had, you people of color in Africa or South America. You can't have it because we made a mistake and screwed up the climate. Therefore, you have to learn from our mistakes. So that's what we're facing. It's immoral. 1 billion people don't have running water and electricity, and they're literally going to be limiting their development.
That was the death knell, actually. You remember the Copenhagen Climate Summit, COP, was it COP 21? I can't remember which COP it was.
Yeah, that was 2009, yes.
2009, December. The thing that was Obama's death knell on that, he came home a defeated man because of the Danish text leaks. You remember that leak that came out that said...
That summit. Yeah, he came home to a blizzard, by the way, no doubt.
The African countries were like, no, we're not. They were going to stick them with the cost and then say they can't industrialize. So like literally punishing the third world or African countries. I spoke to one of the representatives there at the time from, I think, Mozambique. And he said, look, we don't want any part of this, nor do we want any of your financial aid either. Just leave us alone and let us trade and develop. But that's a potential pushback there. But the problem is, Mark, they have really colonized all of these institutions through the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals. And so this ideology is so pervasive amongst the ruling class, even in African countries. Not to, yeah, but go ahead.
Directly on point, two things. on Africa. And what they've done, and particularly since the Copenhagen meeting you're referring to, and I go to every United Nations climate. I've been to every single one since 2002. I went to the Rio Earth Summit, and then everyone, and I may have missed two in the last 20 years, well, these are UN summits. So I go there years before we're talking about COVID lockdowns. They were calling for planned recessions to fight global warming and degrowth. It sounds awfully like the Green New Deal and or a lockdown. But anyway, what they've done, the highest participating delegation of countries at these UN climate summits in recent years, and I can document this with the UN reports, are from African nations. The African delegations have the highest attendance rate. Why would that be? Because Africa, and especially when President Obama was president, they pushed this thing called the UN Climate Fund, $100 billion a year. And I interviewed South African development activists who explained this is a fund designed to pay the government leader who is best able to keep their citizens locked in poverty. And so this is going to affect Africa, South America, India. So the idea is it's against his own people's interests, but his administration will get millions annually from the, this is the promise anyway, from the United Nations. They'll be able to build monuments to themselves, enact, you know, war chests for campaigns and or control if their dictators, consolidate, hand out money to all their cronies. This is how the UN understands it. They realize they're not going to sell people on selling short their nation, but they can bribe people by paying them and making them personally enriched while they screw over their own citizens. So that's one of the things that the UN has a great learning curve on that stuff. They know how to manipulate. They know how to get things done in terms of increasing their power. And that's the same, you know, when you're talking any kind of politics and anything in politics, it's always, and if politics breaks its promise, it's always going to be the one that's against the establishment's interest. They're always going to keep the promises that support the establishment and go against it. So this is the mess that we find ourselves in with this climate agenda right now in the African development. So the same thing now is going to be happening. If he does declare a climate emergency, by the way, it's going to be the blue states that immediately use this. You're going to have people like Governor Newsom or New York's governor. And then New York's already talked openly about this, their governor. In New York City, they're going to be doing all sorts of restrictions. It'll be restrictions on air conditioning, on travel. And it's all going to be for your own good.
So this is really interesting what you're talking about here, Mark, because you know, we're doing some research recently on the new framework that all the institutions, what they call public-private partnership stakeholders, that goes for the United Nations down to the WHO and the various other little branch outfits that branch off of the WHO that have to do with things to do with public health or global public health, or the new term is global health security agenda. That's the actual acronym, and it's called One Health. I don't know if you've seen this yet, but it's baked into all the language now. And so what it does is it wants to merge the concept of public health, human health and animal health. Okay, you know where this is going. Human health, animal health, and then below that is to prevent zoonotic diseases. Okay, that's the whole whole theory. It's theoretical because there's very little proven in practice, by the way, despite what most people believe. And then climate and environment is part of the One Health agenda. That's part of global health security. Okay, One Health, One Economy, One Health. So it's one net, one this, one that, and this one actually has kind of it is basically the framework. You can kind of see how everything drops neatly into this, and it's everywhere now. And it's been quietly being built since 2015, but now because of COVID and because of what we've been through in the last 2 years, all of a sudden it's literally shot up and into its ascendancy now, and it's coming off of all the politicians' mouths at all these World Health Summit and so forth. So that what you're saying is I think coming into structure now in terms of this globalized approach, this single approach.
And you had the WHO try this whole pandemic treaty, which as far as my understanding was, they essentially came up short, and it was because of developing nations who weren't willing to give up the sovereignty for all the, and of course the Biden administration was pushing for more and more control. you can see, again, you asked what things will look like. Look at what this WHO pandemic treaty, their model for their vision of what they wanted. They wanted it to be where Tedros, the head of the WHO, World Health Organization, could on his own declare a global public health pandemic. They could also have any Gates-funded experts affiliated with World Health declare a Gates World Health pandemic and or, you know, some kind of a health emergency. Once that goes into effect, they would then have control, whether it's mask mandates, vaccine mandates, travel bans, lockdowns. That's the world in which they want to live, because they believe at its core, people say, well, why do they want? It's about power. It's about ideology. They believe people left to themselves will essentially destroy the earth, create inequity, impose white supremacy, cause racism, create a climate crisis, that we are the unwashed masses that need every aspect of our life managed, controlled, planned, and it has to be approved by a bureaucrat. This is literally the world which we face in just the last 2 years. It was always a threat, you know, going back to Woodrow Wilson with the bureaucratic state, the administrative state running our lives, and we'd be supposedly happy as plum. But because of COVID, because of the crushing of the economy, and because of all the chaos happening now, that's the thing. The chaos happening now. Vladimir Lenin in Tsarist Russia was phrased, and this I've looked this up and have two sources for it. It was either worse is better or the worse the better. Their goal at this moment, when I say they, I'm talking about World Economic Forum, the United Nations, the World Health Organization, progressives. Their goal right now is to collapse the current system, and the worse it gets, the better, because it just means more and more people will be dependent on government intervention to save us. And whether that, you know, I always say to people, I won't give up my SUV. I'm not going to give up my internal combustion engine. It doesn't work that way. You're not going to have a say. The automakers who sell you your car aren't going to have a say. Nicholas Stern at the World Bank about a month ago announced that he wanted to stop all financing, global World Bank financing, for internal combustion engines. Once the global financiers and the corporate powers get a message like that and they all get on the same page, guess what? The internal combustion engine isn't going to be available at your local showroom. And they're going to keep getting – but it's beyond just internal combustion engine. There are now open calls to ban the private ownership of vehicles. Now, In my book and in my speeches, I do PowerPoint after PowerPoint, and I present all the evidence. It's the transport secretary in the UN has called for this. It's baked into all these different reports. They want to limit that because they consider that one of the great evils of the planet and also just of freedom. The idea they want to keep everyone boxed in. If the whole idea of the Great Reset by the World Economic Forum is you'll own nothing, you'll be happy, everything you want will be delivered by drone. Now think about that. You don't have to go anywhere because it's all coming to you. You won't own anything, but someone's going to own it. You'll be paying rent. And this is their vision. They say you won't eat meat will be a rare treat. The world, U.S. will no longer be the world superpower. When it comes to the whole meat agenda, the whole food agenda, people say, I'm not going to give up my hamburger. Well, guess what? Guess who's the largest single landowner of farmland in the United States? Bill Gates. Now, Bill Gates' agenda is pushing fake synthetic meat on the world. He has a lot of leverage. But don't worry. If you're worried about Bill Gates getting a monopoly, don't worry, because guess who's right behind them? China is now trying to get a land monopoly of U.S. farmland as well. So they're also pushing World Health Organization and the World Economic Forum, United Nations. They're pushing insect eating as a major thing. So they're trying to make meat expensive and rare. This is in the UN report. 2019, they did a big agriculture report, literally laid out. They wanted to make meat eaters treated like old smoking sections in restaurants where you sort of, you castigate the smokers to a small section by the bathroom. That's what they want to do with meat eaters. And they actually openly call for anything you can do to make meat more expensive, thus less affordable, thus less consumption. What a better way than right now with inflation, energy, chaos, supply chain, meat processing plants being burned down. This is the world in which we live right now, Patrick.
Yeah, and also when COVID early on, the media reports that COVID outbreaks in meatpacking plants. I saw the same with monkeypox when they launched that pandemic last month. So yeah, there's definitely there's some kind of concerted agenda there. We got a couple minutes left, but I just want to ask you a couple questions. First, I want to talk about your film as well. But what do you think the ideology is? Because some people say the ideology is technocracy. Technocracy meaning we have identified the problems and only we can provide the solutions, follow our instructions and our system, and we'll deliver you the solution to the problem which we've identified. In this case, it's climate change. Is that really the thing, though? Behind that is, do you think overpopulation, that kind of obsession with the Malthusian Go ahead.
Yeah, German climate advisor and others, and I've interviewed him, Hans Schulenhuber, I've interviewed him at UN Summit. They believe that the carrying capacity of the Earth is 1 billion people. What do we have, 8 billion, 7.5 billion now? I can't remember the exact number, something like that. They want to eliminate 6 billion plus people in order to make it sustainable on Earth. They're open. Bill Gates at a forum with featured Al Gore saying that we need ubiquitous fertility management in Africa because Africa is projected to have more people than China and India by 2050. So you have a white, wealthy Western politician lamenting that there's going to be too many people of color in the next few decades, so we need to manage their fertility. I think at its core in the technocracy, I think it's that rule by experts. These people actually believe that you're smarter, you're more educated. And I liken this, think of your kid wearing, being, you know, if you go send him to public school, private schools, some of them did it, a lot of private schools did it too. Send him to school, they had to wear a mask, right? Or socially distance, or some of them required vaccine. If you were a parent and you complained, the school board would come back and say, well, wait a minute, this is what the public health experts recommend. Do you have a degree in epidemiology? Well, no, I'm just, oh, do you have expertise? Do you have a position in the government where you study the latest? Well, no, I don't. Well, you're just a parent. You're a rube. You're a redneck from rural Kansas. What do you know about whether your kid needs a mask or not? We are keeping you safe. We have the best and brightest working on it. That, I think, is at its core the appeal, the non-ideological appeal, if you will, of the average government bureaucrat who gets into this and government worker. In a sense, it's an appeal to this vision of life. I guess it's ideology, but that's a big part of it. And that's why William F. Buckley once said, and when he ran for mayor in New York, I believe, it was like 1966, he said he'd rather be ruled by picking any random names, 10 random names out of the New York City phone book than he would be by the entire leadership of Harvard University. And that's the gist. It's be very afraid. And this goes back, and I trace it back in the book, to Woodrow Wilson. It goes through FDR, this whole progressive movement of the idea of rule by the administrative state, rule by experts who know better than you, because if you're left to your own devices, like I just said, you'll create the climate crisis, you'll create inequity, white supremacy, racism, you'll create a climate emergency. That they can't allow that. But I don't want to leave completely negative. People say, after I talk, people are like, well, wait a minute, is it all over? I'm like, yes, it's time to gouge your eyes out and give up. But it's really not. Here's why. The optimism here, I do want to just say something optimistic. It's been great to see the pushback. In my book, I detail Loudoun County, Virginia, as essentially the shot heard around the world. It was a small band, began as a small band of teacher and parents protesting the local school board in Loudoun County, Virginia, outside of Washington, D.C., whether it was critical race theory and the mask mandates and all the COVID theater that they were imposing. It got to the point where parents were being arrested. They were shutting down the school board meetings. They were canceling them. There were police. There was national coverage. They became the heroes. What happened was that spurred a movement that turned a blue state like Virginia to elect a Republican governor. At the same time, New Jersey almost lost in the deepest blue state, the most Democrat state you can have. Almost lost the governor, almost lost re-election to an unknown guy with no money who was in the New Jersey House, some like delegate. So what happened was, and this was, and I quote this in my book, I always try to use mainstream sources. When I mention Bill Gates is America's largest farm owner, source is NBC News. When I mention that the Democrats actually have a memo and did a survey, it was New York Times that reported this. They did a survey after the Virginia gubernatorial race last fall in 2021. They did the survey in 2022. but it found that even among the Democrat base, they no longer wanted to live under this new normal, that even the blue state Democrats wanted kids unmasked, the vaccines lifted, and all the social distancing. So what happened was the science changed. You see experts on CNN, Lorraine, what's her name, Wen, saying the science has changed. No, the political science changed. And the New York Times openly reported this, that they literally shifted it, and then they immediately, this is why New York State, New York City, everyone just dropped vax mandates, kids masking. It all melted away because of that electoral shock begun, what I argue, by the Loudoun County school parents in Virginia who fought back against it. So in the book, I end by saying, and I have a whole last chapter on the great resist or the great reject for the great reset. And the gist of it is this. In 1989, the Berlin Wall fell in Eastern Germany. Was it because the East German government said, oh, 40 years of oppression under the Soviets is enough, let's end this? It's because the people no longer gave their consent to tyranny, and they literally had enough, and they fought back, and they resisted. And ultimately, that's going to be what we need to do here. It's got to be a mass resistance, whether it's, you know, if they try to do a climate emergency, odd, even driving people go out in their car and they risk tickets and they risk losing their car. They got to fight this at every level. It's got to be, you know, I don't even shop at Walmart anymore because the CEO of Walmart is all in on the Great Reset. I try to avoid any corporate chains, retail chains now, because I don't trust any of them. I try to only support small business. I used to not think of 20 years ago, I used to think those people were kooks. They were typically on the left who didn't like Walmart and all that. But I now realize that the biggest mistakes we made as a country, and Ross Perot was the one that was correct in the debate with Ross Perot and Al Gore in 1992 with Larry King. He was the one warning about NAFTA and all the free trade. When that all happened, it allowed China to move in, and essentially now we're dependent. And of course, the Green New Deal is all about increasing our dependence on China, in Russia, and the Middle East as we outsource all of our energy to countries with much lower environmental standards than we do. But it actually perversely increases global emissions because we end up, giving it to countries without the technology that we have, because we lead the world in reducing emissions if you care about that stuff. So I'm very optimistic because I think the human spirit yearns for freedom. And I think we can fight this. And I think it's odd people like Elon Musk who could play a major part too, at least in the information battle.
Yes. Yeah. Well, let's talk about your film before we go. I'm just looking. I'm actually kind of amused, Mark, at your Wikipedia page for the first Climate Hustle, this 2016 film. And it says, narrated by climate change denialist Mark Marano. When you see a flippant Wikipedia entry like that, you know that you're absolutely over the target, and it's kind of amusing. But what I love is that they're saying the overwhelming, what do they call it? The overwhelming scientific consensus about climate change. This film rejects that and the impact of human activities on it. So that was the first one. So you've got a sequel. So tell us about the new film and your latest book as well.
Well, the new film is Climate Hustle 2, and we just had our broadcast premiere on Newsmax TV last month. So if you check Newsmax, they're going to be rerunning it. I don't have the latest rerun of it, but it runs in a two-hour slot. It stars Kevin Sorbo as the host. I'm the climate reporter in it, and it has me all over the place. I'm in at the UN Climate Summits interviewing people, and I'm at Louis XIV Palace, Louis Versailles Palace in France. And we go through almost every aspect of the climate debate. We do through the science, the fraud of the 97%. That was only 77 anonymous scientists, and how one UN scientist said a claim of 97% was, quote, pulled from thin air. It's a design to stop people from challenging it. In other words, the experts know, are you a climate scientist? Then you can't challenge this, because 97% of scientists agree. And the movie goes to how climate is a religion. We have the great clip of the great Michael Crichton in there explaining how urban atheists have adopted climate change as their environmentalism, as their new modern religion. We go through all the wacky solutions. We actually feature in there footage of the guy from NYU professor Matthew Lau, who believes humans need to be shrunk in order to fight global warming, that we need psychedelic drugs to make us care more about the climate and the environment. And I go through and we show the whole fraud of the UN Paris Agreement. The gist of it is this: even if we face the climate catastrophe, everything they proposed would have no impact on emissions, let alone the climate. It's a complete con from A to Z. And one of the things I like to do is, here's an analogy. the gist of it is this. It's like right now the Biden administration is so happy with what's happening with our inflation and shortages and blackouts and brownouts and skyrocketing energy because this is the chemotherapy. Biden and all of his cabinet are basically saying, wait till you get to the other side. So imagine if you've been diagnosed with cancer and you're on chemotherapy and you're vomiting and you're losing your hair and you're miserable. Keep your eye on the prize. You want to be cancer free. So to these true believers out there, they actually think that this is our chemotherapy and that once this is done, we'll be free of the climate crisis. Once we make that transition to net zero and we have that climate utopia on the other end. The problem is we've been diagnosed by a quack. And even if we had the disease that they claim, their solution would have no impact on the disease. So we go to that. We go into that in the Climate Hustle 2 film. But it's available on Newsmax.com, Newsmax TV, and it's also you can order it from ClimateHustle2.com. You can get a DVD or a digital copy of the film.
No, definitely.
My new book's The Great Reset, coming out in August. Not to be confused with Glenn Beck's version. I haven't read Glenn Beck's version of The Great Reset, but my version is a lot more fun. I open with a quote from The Twilight Zone. I feature copious clips from Bill Maher and his transformation into a rational, incredible, intellectual human being. I also feature Richard Carlin, the old comedian. I try to make mine fun, witty, pop culture. It's written as like a idiot's guide to one of those idiot guide type books. So there's little boxes. I lay it all out, make it all understandable. I go through everything from the COVID climate connection to how we followed China to the origins of the Great Reset to how the transfer of wealth to how lockdowns kill to all the progressive left-wing people who converted and had eye-opening people like Robert F. Kennedy Jr., Naomi Wolf, Jimmy Dore, a former Young Turks, progressive liberal reporter, now by my favorite political commentator, Russell Brand. So I think people are going to really, it's really reading, easy, friendly book that goes through and just lays out the case for what's happening to our world and how to fight back.
Sounds like definitely a book that I want to get a hold of, and I'm sure a lot of people want to get a hold of that. Definitely something to have by your side to arm yourself with some knowledge and information in this epic fight, Mark, this fight that you've been waging for a very long time. And in the end, I just want to say thank you very much for joining us and for your time on this, Mark. Much appreciated.
Thank you, Patrick. I appreciate it.
There he goes, ladies and gentlemen. That is Mark Morano. He is the editor, founder of ClimateDepot.com, also a filmmaker and a host and contributor at TNT Radio. Thank you very much for joining us, and we will see you on the other side. That was our discussion with Mark Morano. What a powerful interview. That was part two. The first part was in the previous hour. We'll have all of that up on the archive after the show, but a really, really amazing conversation. I mean, I've covered this issue on and off, really for, you know, almost the last 15 years. And that is among, if not the best, interview that I've taken part in on this topic. So a real tour de force by Mark Morano. And again, pointing to his books, his films, his show on TNT. We'll continue to do that, as time goes by, because guess what? This issue is not going away. This issue is not going away. It's only getting more intense. So, you know, the information war, well, we're all engaged in it one way or another. And let's take a short break here with TNT, Today's News Talk, and we'll be right back after these messages with the station for final commentary on this issue of climate change. And I will hopefully be zeroing in on what they've been saying this week at the G7, what it's going to mean in terms of policy, what you should be looking forward going forward. We'll be right back after these messages.
Jeremy Nell on TNT Radio.
This is a very interesting way of enslaving a lot of people. They just deem something illegal. They just put you into the red zone. They say that you're now a biohazard. You might not be able to fly because you've exceeded your carbon emissions limit. What really worries me here is that there's this weird kind of outsourcing of individual intelligence to centralized intelligence. And I cannot see the upsides to this other than really, really good marketing. And it's quite scary. Do you agree with me on my assessment about the dangers of digital ID and central intelligence?
Absolutely, yeah. In our magazine, you know, Covert Action Magazine is devoted to exposing, you know, providing, you know, scrutiny and exposure of the abuses of intelligence agencies. And this is, you know, a worldwide phenomenon that, you know, George Orwell would be rolling his grave at what's going on today.
Jeremy Nell and Germ Warfare on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
In many countries around the world, medical care is scarce. Countless millions have no access to safe surgery. Mercy Ships is there to help. Mercy Ships provides free surgeries for the thousands of those who are waiting for surgery at each port.
Mercy Ships is bringing services to countries that would otherwise never be able to access those services.
Find out how you can help by visiting our website at mercyships.org. That's mercyships.org.
You're going to need me.
You're going to need us.
All of us.
You're going to need our help with your water, your air, your food.
You're going to need our determination, our compassion.
You're going to need the next generation of leaders to face the challenges the future will bring.
And we promise we'll be there when you need us.
Today, 4-H is growing the next generation of leaders. Support us at 4-H.org.
Government has taken our rights and will never give them back unless we make them. The voice of freedom is TNT Radio.
Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to TNT Today's News Talk. I'm Patrick Henningsen, your host. We're cruising into the final segment of the final hour of this live broadcast on Tuesday. And what a tour de force this program has been so far. We played both parts of our interview that we conducted with Mark Morano, the editor of ClimateDepot.com. He's also an author and a filmmaker as well, and a powerful two-part interview there, and I hope you enjoyed that. And so, you know, we'll wrap up this conversation on climate change. There's a few developments that I'd want to point people to, especially regarding the recent G7 meeting in Madrid, which just concluded. And so normally these meetings, these confabs are back to back. And this has just proven to be incredibly convenient in terms of harmonizing policy and more so for the propaganda, for the talking points. And so everybody's on the same page. The media is on the same page. More and more, we're seeing that all of these things are being done globally. So the talking points are being formulated and disseminated globally. Certainly, you know, anything that's coming out of the G7 or NATO, for instance, everybody's got to be on the same page, and so all the leaders there. So it's becoming like kind of a corporate cookie cutout political conversation. Everybody's basically saying the same thing. They're all wearing the same white shirt. They've all got their jackets off. It's just like your global government, you know. So these are just like administrative zones under a global government. The question is, who's in charge? Who's running the global government? At the moment, it looks like it's some kind of a collective arrangement. And we spoke about this before the break in part two of our conversation with Mark Morano. And so looking at the G7, they've got to prime the public, you know. So in order to get a consensus, in order to make policy work, you need a consensus. How do you get the consensus? You got to get the consensus via the grassroots. So to do that, you need to astroturf. You know what the term astroturf means? If some of you might know that. If you don't, it's basically fake grassroots, plastic grassroots, astroturf, a la the Houston Astrodome is the first sporting arena, indoor arena, to have sort of fake grass for the baseball team there. Nolan Ryan throwing his 95-mile-an-hour, 100-mile-an-hour fastballs in the Astrodome in Houston. Astroturf, their fake grass, actually murder on a lot of athletes' knees. I feel bad for any football players or baseball players had to play on that early on. Now it's AstroTurf has come a long way since then. It's got little rubber beads. It's got a little bit of a bounce, a pushback, sort of like soil and turf. But anyway, you get the picture. AstroTurf is fake grassroots. And so Greta Thunberg has been a great success, a great AstroTurf success. Her whole rise, her ascendancy into the consciousness of the social justice warriors and virtue signaling community of the West was incredibly well engineered. From the first protest that she had, I believe it was in Stockholm, where she's sitting outside one of the government ministries or something, protesting the climate with a sort of a homeless person's type homemade sign. And it turns out there's a whole PR machine behind that. Her parents are actors and pop stars. So this was incredibly well scripted. And she was rolled out very carefully. And some of the interests behind her, some of the same green financial interests from day one, the green financialization of nature. All of this was outlined in Corey Morningstar. She's a Canadian activist and researcher. She wrote a series on her her blog. One of her blogs is the, I believe, the Wrong Kind of Green, Corey Morningstar. And it's called the Greta Thunberg series that she wrote, The Making of Greta Thunberg or something along those lines, volume 1, 2, 3. And it just outlines her push. So she was at Glastonbury and she's up on stage. She's not a kid anymore. She's 19. She doesn't look like this sort of meek child that she was marketed as, although she's quite small in stature. The angry Swede is not as angry anymore. I think she's read that book, How to Win Friends and Influence People, and I guess shouting and berating the public, saying how dare you to everybody for robbing her for childhood, blaming everybody for that, for stealing her future. That's not going to go very far. That didn't test too well in the focus groups. If Greta's going to blame anybody for robbing her childhood, she should look no further than her own parents. But that's another story. So here she is at Glastonbury. Let's listen to what Greta had to say over the weekend to a crowd of 100,000 revelers there at the festival in Somerset. Let's listen to this.
These crises are the biggest story in the world. And it must be spoken as far and as wide as possible, as far as our voices can carry, and even further still. It must be told in articles, newspapers, in movies and songs, at breakfast tables, lunch meetings and family gatherings, in lifts, at bus stops and in rural shops, in schools, boardrooms and marketplaces, in the fields, in the warehouses and on the factory floors, at union meetings, political workshops and football games, in kindergartens and in old people's homes, at hospitals and at music festivals like Glastonbury, on social media and on the evening news, on dusty country roads and in the alleys of our cities and towns. These crises are the biggest...
So that's Greta. So she just basically listed just about everything. Sorry, I had to cut that short. At breakfast tables, in old people's homes, on factory floors, what else? Football pitches, football games, at markets, in fields. I mean, aren't they doing that already? That's the gaslighting that's been going on. They've been shoveling this climate rhetoric down everybody's throats now for years. That's the last thing you want to hear at a football game. No one's talking about climate change. It's not happening, Greta. So this whole thing is fanciful, continuation of the postmodernists, kind of hopeful, not reality-based. There's no room for discussion, or the science is settled, we're told. So there's no debate. There's no critical analysis to be had here, according to Greta and the people who wrote her speech. I mean, she's carrying a handful of papers. And so she's reading off a script. I mean, you'd think she should be well trained by now, to whereby she could memorize. I mean, how many speeches has this girl done over the years? She's going on, this is her fourth year. She's going into her fourth year as a kind of climate global icon. you'd think that she could memorize a 15-minute speech. It's not that hard. Maybe an index card, some bullet points, and she could kind of do it extemporaneously. One would think, no, she's got to read it verbatim off of an A4 sheet. Why is that? Because the people that are handling her are scared to death that she's going to go off script. Because we've seen her go off script, and she had a go at everybody, including her own lobby. And so she's got her own thoughts. She's a bit dangerous in that sense. I mean, I want to see the unchained Greta. I want to see Greta unleashed. I want to see her without the script, just going off on everybody. I mean, that's the Greta I want to see. We saw a glimpse of that, I believe it was last summer. And boy, did that send chills down the spine. I mean, everyone saw her at the UN. It was Trump's last year. I think it was 2019 or something like that, late 2019. And she was at the UN reading that speech. How dare you? How dare you? She's like literally reading it off the paper. I mean, how disingenuous, but her fans loved it. The political people that like to push her around, use her as a battering ram for their policies, they loved it. It kind of normal people looked at it and said, that's a bit contrived. That's a bit disingenuous. But anyway, her fans loved it. The Democratic Party, the AOCs of the world, they're all around there in New York at the time, I believe. They loved it. But it's a bit disingenuous. So they need to keep her on script. They need to keep her on script. And otherwise, Greta might go off script. And that's the last thing you want. So she's basically saying we need more propaganda. And it's kind of it's a desperate lunge. It's a desperate lunge, a desperate attempt to revitalize what is clearly a dying, failing narrative. It is really losing its hold. You're talking about an end times mythological narrative, which is the world's going to end in 10 years. They said that back in 1990, 2000 came, it didn't end. They said, no, we're going to move that back. 2010 is when that's the point of no return. 2010 comes. They said, no, it's 2020. 2020, we're going to reach that tipping point. Gladwell, right? Tipping point. Malcolm Gladwell. Yeah, and after that, it's too late. We can't come back. The planet will be in terminal decline, and everybody's going to be under, Florida's going to be underwater. It's going to be, it's a day after Armageddon. Didn't happen. It's 2020 came. Got something else in 2020, which was a fake pandemic. But so we got something in 2020, didn't we? So now they're pushing the climate thing back a little further. Now it's 2030. So now we're into the game now. All the chips are on 2030. Of course, 2030 is going to come and it's going to go. And I'm telling you right now, if you're listening to this podcast on the archives in 2030, you'll be like, yeah, he knew what he was talking about. 2030 is going to come and go, and they will push the date back to 2035. They might even shorten it to a five-year cycle. Five-year cycle of doom, doom spiral, 5 years. And then we've got 2050 as a backstop. It's like 2050 could be the backstop. If there'll be enough of us around by then. Common sense thinkers, who knows? If we're all lucky, we're all still here. We haven't been annihilated by a nuclear holocaust. But anyway, they keep moving the doom date back. Move the doom date back. So the G7 is trying to find a way to glue this thing together, or midwife it, as Victoria Nuland likes to call it. Midwife this thing. So they're meeting at the G7 this past week in Bavaria, somewhere in the Alps. And this is interesting how the Financial Times has reworked this. And this is, I could do, every day is a masterclass in propaganda. Every day. If you're consuming mainstream media, every day is a masterclass. I could do daily courses in propaganda, deconstruction, dissemination. And just by looking at it, I could just sample three mainstream stories of any subject per day and just show you how masterfully they do the manipulation. Here's the Financial Times. This is a beauty, actually. I just found this this morning. Global CEOs urge G7 leaders to step up climate action. So by the looks of this, this is interesting. It sounds like global CEOs basically want to save the planet from climate change. And so they're pushing G7 leaders to do more, to roll back the warming of the planet, right? That's what you would think that headline means, but actually not. Companies, including Shell and Bank of America, are calling for clarity and stability. That's very different. So I'm reading the fine print in the article, and as of course, the fine print's always different from the headline. That's called Propaganda 101. And so what do the companies want? The CEOs, there's a certain amount of virtue signaling that they'll do publicly. And of course, they're being bullied into signing on. This is what the World Economic Forum's job is, really, is also to entice people with, you know, whatever, to be up there at Davos and then get them to have a public face whereby they have to sign on to ESGs, UN Sustainability Protocols, UN-led type things, environment, sustainable governance, ESGs. And so Bank of America, Shell, oil, of course, the oil companies are all over it. They love it because they got to kind of keep people from brigading them, and they might even be able to cash in on some carbon credit action. I'm sure the banks are well invested in the financialization of nature and the future central bank digital currency regime. I'm sure they're well positioned to do well out of that, but they're basically long for the ride. The boards are constantly under threat from the mob, and so they're basically saying they want stability and clarity. What they're saying is we need to know where you're going with the policy so that we can adjust accordingly and that we can survive. So this isn't corporations beating the door down of leaders, telling them, you know, to do more to save the planet. It's not that. That's the propaganda headline. The reality is they're basically scrambling to try to know what the policies are, where the governments are on this so that they can make adjustments and survive. Basically. So our politicians don't care about the performance of these companies anymore. It looks like they're pulling the rug out from the system, full stop. Okay. And so it's going to be the strong survive at the end of this. Who can afford to put up with all these regulations, ESGs, UN Sustainable Development Goals, and so forth? So here we go. Major global companies are pushing world leaders to step up action to tackle climate change at the G7 summit. Not actually, no, they're not doing that. They're calling for large-scale carbon pricing and measures to boost demand for clean technology. They're not actually doing that. What they're looking for is government climate policies that offer the private sector clarity and stability. That's the meat of it. All the rest is propaganda and embellishments by the Financial Times. And by the way, the FT is more sober than any other mainstream media outlets. They're completely off the hook on this with all the green journalists running around. So this is interesting. The pressure is coming from the government, yes, they're creating the AstroTurf movement to get the people to be woke and to demand woke things from corporations. But the real teeth in this, who's going to actually make this work, are actually the corporations. Okay. So, you know, you won't be able to do business in the future without your ESGs, any of these companies. They'll get locked out. It's not long now, not long from now, they'll be sanctioned. They'll be sanctioned. You know, to do trading, to do import export on the high seas. Do you understand? They want to reconfigure the Treaty of the Seas, the UN international law that governs the seas, to put climate concerns under the rubric of the One Health agenda, global public health, merged with climate. And then that's going to govern who's going to be allowed to put a boat in the water and ship containers from A to B. Do you see where this is going? Do you see where this is going? This is another layer of control of the economy globally, freedom of movement. So we know how this is going to work in terms of airlines with regards to social credit, carbon credit, throttling people's ability to travel so only the wealthy can do it. Okay, we know about that, but this is another level. Think about cancel culture. Who administers cancel culture? It's not government. Government pressures Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Google to cancel or to deplatform people. But at the end, it's the corporations that do it. It's the corporations that do it. That's where the teeth is. So in terms of enforcing your whatever, or enforcing this new regime, this new Green New Deal, this new environmentally sustainable regime, it's the teeth is going to be at the corporate level. This is corporativism. This is hardcore fascism. And if you want to go against these machines, you got to go against 50 lawyers, and it won't happen. They are the law unto themselves. Corporate policy rules. The rule of law, that's yesterday. The rule of law, that's a bit old fashioned. No, this is about corporate policy, and it's going to be done globally. That's what we're up against. Anyway, thank you for joining us this week. It's been an absolute pleasure. And thank you to Mark Morano for that amazing two-part interview. And again, this will be up on the archives after the show. Thank you to Christian in the first hour. Very much appreciated your contribution too. And thank you all for listening this week at TNT Today's News Talk. We'll have another fantastic program for you on Thursday, same time, same place. I'm your host, Patrick Henningsen. We'll see you there.